red alert.
I am not putting my uniform on. It is too bloody hot today. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Beyond Track Podcast. Nobody here was ready for that, but we're going to do it anyway.
Roll with it. Yeah, just roll with it.
Let's go.
We'll do it live. We will do it live.
Fuck it, we'll do it live. Fuck it.
We're doing it live, pre-recorded style. Today, we are going to talk to you about something.
Star Trek Lower Decks.
Reflections. Just let you know, I've had COVID for the last week. The brain fog is real. It's worse than a Klingon bird of prey trying to fly through San Francisco. that being said, yes, my esteemed colleagues are correct. We're going to talk to you today about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, Episode 5, Reflections, featuring my favorite Star Trek character ever, Utherford.
Utherford.
I hate it.
I should have put that in the notes, damn it.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Quick, do a quick find and replace in the notes.
I gotta edit.
Oh, man. Today, this episode was a lot of fun, and to break it down for you right now, I present to you Big J.
Hey, everybody. Okay. As I like to say, let's get lotioned up and ready to go. Episode 5 notes.
Sorry, they got me.
In the ensign's hallway, Rutherford is having a nightmare about his ship exploding in front of him. He wakes and screams, scaring another ensign walking down the hallway, seemingly confused about his dream. The captain explains in her log that the ship is at Tolgana 4 and that they'll have time to fulfill some Starfleet quotas. Mariner and Boimler are assigned to the recruitment booth, much to Mariner's dismay. And as they're loading the shuttle, she complains to Ransom. Ransom threatens to send them both to Starbase 80 if they step a foot out of line, reminding them that he'll be checking in. Tendi, meanwhile, notices that Rutherford is off, and she clears his seemingly useless long-term memory cache so that he might be able to take a nap and start getting some sleep again. Unfortunately, he wakes up with a different personality, one that wants to take over, and one that is not terribly pleasant. You know, I think that happens to me. I feel attacked.
Yeah.
Our Rutherford seems to be stuck in his reflection, but no one can hear him except whoever is in his body. Down on the planet, Mariner is trying really hard to recruit to avoid Starbase 80, but the independent space archaeologist in the booth next to them keeps ruining Mariner's pitches. She keeps insulting Starfleet, but Boimler manages to calm Mariner down before she can do any damage. Rutherford, meanwhile, can't get any help, and the new personality begins insulting his girlfriend and trying to escape. Rutherford accidentally lets him know who Tendi is, and he's almost successful in fooling Tendi, except Rutherford discovers that he can hurt his body by punching his implant. Tendi calls security after he escapes into the hallway, excuse me, knowing that whoever is in Rutherford's body isn't him. We find out on the planet that the archaeologist's name is Petra Aberdeen, and she served on the Victory but wised up and got out of Starfleet, calling it a pseudo-navy and further insulting Mariner. She wanted a life of freedom and nonviolence, but Mariner still calls her a thief and tries not to let her anger get the best of her. Rutherford's body gets all the way to the transporter bay, beaming himself onto the captain's yacht and evading Shax's before he can stun him. Our Rutherford buys Shax's some time and begins messing with his implant. And Shax is able to find him before he can take off and stun him. According to T'Ana, Rutherford is still himself, but he's himself from 10 years ago. Tendi is terrified, but T'Ana says that they'll just have to see which Rutherford wakes up. In Rutherford's blank white void of subconsciousness, both Rutherfords start fighting over who should keep the body and which one is an imposter. And the younger Rutherford manifests his old garage and his ship. You're going to have to help me with this one. Sampaguita?
Sampaguita.
Okay.
Sampaguita.
Our Rutherford asks why he doesn't remember his garage. And the younger explains that it's because he erased his own memories. And we get a flashback of the surgery that Rutherford experienced last season, in which the doctors say he'll think it was elective. Younger Rutherford is angry that he would choose to wipe his memories and explains that he's been stored away and trying to get out, hence the time our Rutherford thought he liked pears once. Only one of them can remain in his body, and the other will be erased. They fight to leave, but they have to figure out what happened first. We learn that Rutherford used to sneak off from the Academy to build and test his own engines, since they wouldn't let him do that in Starfleet. He funded all of his projects with Devron races, illegal races that go through the neutral zone. The old Rutherford says they should have a competition, and they decide to have a race, where they build their own ships, manifest a track, and the best man wins. Mariner and Boimler are still struggling to recruit, with the Collectors Guild and the Conspiracy Truthers bullying them incessantly, until Mariner breaks the tiny model Stargazer ship in frustration. Meanwhile, the two Rutherfords are busy building their ships for the race. Sampa Gutty gets a refit in a paint job while Rutherford builds the Delta Flyer. The younger Rutherford laughs at him, and he's used Starfleet designs when he could have used Vulcan inverters. Our Rutherford, however, is excited about wearing the matching outfit that comes with the ship. Same dude. Once again, back on Tilghana 4, the archaeologist continues bullying Mariner by bringing up her mother in the Cerritos. Before the outpost scientists walk up to their booth, Mariner tries to shut it down, but they ask if they could get cool uniforms too, and Boimler explains that they would. They drop the act and start making fun of all of the different uniform designs, before taking Boimler's rank pip off his uniform and throwing it on the ground. Boimler sees red and goes ballistic, using a quite few choice words as he starts ripping booths apart and bullying everyone else at the fair. Surprisingly, this gets a lot more people to sign up for Starfleet, saying that if it can give them that kind of confidence, they want it. Mariner starts signing up people while Boimler begins advocating for the doctor's rights. Both Rutherfords are ready for the race, and the race will go through the neutral zone with rogue planets and all kinds of other dangers. About halfway through the race, the other Rutherford is winning and starts to get cocky right before a Romulan warbird decloaks and begins firing at both of them. The last one standing will take the body, and suddenly, our Rutherford starts giving orders to his crew, Tindy, Mariner, and Boimler. The other Rutherford said anything goes, and he wasn't going to race without his friends. Meanwhile, Random goes to check on Mariner and Boimler at the booth and watches Boimler break a pencil in rage as Mariner fills pads with contact information for all the new recruits. At the race, the Sampa... Why did they make the most complicated ship name ever? I can't pronounce it.
Sampa Gita
goes down, and Tindy beams the younger Rutherford onto the Delta Flyer and gets them out of there. He admits defeat, and they end up back in the subconscious void. The old Rutherford comments on how much he's grown and says that our Rutherford has lost all his rage. He then remembers how he got his implant, and we see a more clear flashback of the surgery and the accident. An officer stands over him, telling the surgeons to erase all memories he has of him and the project. The surgeon once again assures him that Rutherford will think that the implant was elective. He's horrified that he was a part of a cover-up, and then the younger Rutherford fades away, our Rutherford waking up in sickbay as himself again. Boimler is sent to the brig for his actions, but Ransom assures him that he's impressed at how the ensign stood up for Starfleet, and invites him for a drink once he's out. In the brig, Rutherford tells the gang about what might have happened when he got his implant, and Boimler praises Mariner for keeping her cool on the planet. Mariner goes off to do the mission log, and it gets interrupted by a call from Petra Aberdeen, the archaeologist. She reveals that she actually needed a distraction to steal back an artifact from the museum that was near them, and offers Mariner more than Starfleet can offer if she's willing to leave the bureaucracy behind her. Mariner declines, but saves her contact information anyway. And that is it. I swear I knew how to read. I went over beforehand, but in my head, it's different than coming out. And so if I sounded badly, sorry.
You did great. You did
fine. It's fine. So to explain the name Sampa Gita, right? It's the Tagalog name for the national flower of the Philippines.
Okay.
I loved that detail.
It's a kind of a jasmine flower. So.
Ah.
Which is Eugene Cordero's ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh.
For those of you listening, Eugene Cordero is the voice of Otherford. I don't know who the voice of Rutherford is, but he's the voice. He's the same guy.
Rutherford and Rutherford.
Maybe it's Eugene Cordero's mirror universe duplicate that voices Rutherford.
Oh,
but no, I thought that was really cool. I had a couple of Filipino mutuals that were really, really happy about that, Don especially, that were very, very happy about that coming to fruition. I thought that was really, really, really cool.
It is, and it's really thoughtful on the part of the creators and the writers to be like, hey, let's make things get a deeper meaning. It's Lower Decks. If you want to dive deep on it, you can, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Star Trek lore. It can be a representation.
And it's something that kind of makes sense, right? Like, naming your ship after, like, your national animal, your national flower, perfectly logical.
So where does Tom Paris come from that he named it the Delta Flyer?
Well, they're flying in the Delta. That might have something to do with it.
The Delta might quadrant. Be it.
Are you sure?
And it flies?
Might
my
be.
Chemistry
the Delta
teacher
Flyer
always
is
told
a type of bird.
Delta means change. And I didn't see any change. They don't have any money.
They changed uniforms. They changed uniforms when they went onto the Delta Flyer.
But the uniforms didn't fly. The Delta Flyer.
But
can I just say
the Delta Flyer made them change the uniforms?
Oh, man. For those of you listening, you're like, I hate this pedantic bullshit. Stop. I'm stopping. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. The Delta Flyer is a species of bird. But no, I mean, like, just seeing, I don't know. Look, I'm a Voyager fan. I've been a huge Voyager fan since I started getting back into Trek. And, this episode was so cool. I just loved seeing the basically they were recreating, not exactly, but the race episode in Voyager, and that was so cool, and I really loved to see it. And I loved that Rutherford was really excited about the Delta Flyer uniform, because, like, hello. Any cosplayer would be like, oh my god, me. So true. I loved how many nods to Voyager there were in it, and then, like, he was really excited about the Borg tech and the Delta Flyer, and, like, because, you know, yeah, older Rutherford had the Romulan inverters or whatever it was, but he had, like, Borg tech and a bunch of stuff they learned in the Delta Quadrant and, you know, all that kind of different stuff. And he also had his friends. And I loved him so much.
That was a sweet moment.
I adore him.
I don't want to do this without my friends.
It was really, really cool, yeah. I just thought it was really cool that he, like, was also a Tom Paris fanboy.
And Renzo has decided to return to his bucket to recharge.
Not the bucket, Renzo. Yeah.
And what's the bucket? I need to know about all the bucket.
Otto's bucket. You know the bucket.
The Otto bucket.
I need a bucket.
Let's see.
Well, I've got a bucket, but I'm sleeping.
For a while.
Oh my god, it's awesome.
Yep. Nope.
What are you drinking, Susan?
I'm drinking whiskey and iced tea.
Oh, wasn't that
having a little cocktail? I don't know.
Ooh.
It's delicious.
Take the edge off.
It's lemon iced tea. it's like a Arnold Palmer, but with whiskey in it.
I have been dosing off of lemon water for like 5 days now, and I don't think I'm ever gonna go back. I'm just gonna put lemon juice in water from now on and defeat scurvy for the rest of my life. Oh, man. Dude, okay. The thing that I saw that really freaked me out the most was the Vogon. Vorgon. There was a Vorgon.
Yep.
Now, if you don't remember the Vorgons, they were from a fourth season episode, Captain's Holiday. They're from the future. And the last time we saw them, they were trying to stop something that they knew already had happened, which was the destruction of the Toxutat. So, what can we take away from this?
That the Vorgons exist in the 24th century as well?
Because they're time travelers,
No. They exist then too.
That there's another artifact they're looking at and it's at this swap meet?
No. The Vorgons, there's no reason to think that the Vorgons are, like, novel and new to the 27th century or whatever they were from. They just were around at this time too. No need to get suspicious about time travel so quickly.
But we
I know.
But if they include them in the show, knowing that they were time travelers in the older episode,
sure. We also had an Andorian. We also had a Kivas Fajo freaky alien.
We had an adventurer person steal an artifact and then disappear with it, and the time travelers were there with the artifact, and I had this whole headcanon. They're there to steal Rom's Negastaff.
We don't know that's ROMs. It could be from previous Negus. Could be a couple hundred years old. Could be some boring Negus we've never heard of.
Wait a second.
Boring Negus.
Wait a second.
I've run out of tinfoil like for my hat.
Passed down? Isn't it like ancient?
I don't know. I would have thought that each one got their own because they want to make it in their own likeness or whatever.
Well, Rom is the Negus.
He's now.
How do you lose his staff?
We don't know that one's his. Could be one of the old ones.
You know what? Rom's just darn soft-hearted enough to be like, oh, I'll just donate it to here to save the kids. And it just ends up in a museum.
Oh my god.
Besides, we know that the Negus does loan out his staff when he has a grand proxy. Remember how Neewix pretended to be one for a bit?
He does do the grand proxy.
They probably have more than one staff.
What was it? There was that great episode where Sisko had it and he made Quark kiss it.
Point is, there's probably more than one staff anyways.
I'm forgetting something. Man. Okay, so other cool references. Sorry, I was just going to go through the other cool references. What did you want to talk about?
So, I fucking loved seeing the Derridex, like, in terrifying decloaking glory, right? It's such a good-looking ship, it's so terrifying, and it just makes the Sempagita and the Delta Flyer look like mincemeat, which is appropriate. So, I love that.
And it was so well animated, too. I mean, from, like, an artistic perspective, it was so beautifully done. Because I know that kind of animation style was really difficult. And they did a really good job. I mean, it was beautiful. I thought it was really, really cool. And it did. It did dwarf the other ships, and it made it very realistic to me.
Did you know that a Galaxy-class starship could fit inside that empty space of a Derridex?
Mm-hmm. Did you know that the Stone of Gaul has been stolen from wherever it was? By the collectors? So,
in one of my favorite Star Trek novels, there's a Defiant class ship that parks itself inside of the space between the wings of the Derridex and decides to spin, and it uses its like its static warp bubble to shred the Derridex around it.
I feel like I've read that one. Which novel was that? Do you remember?
I believe it was an Avenger, which was a Judith and Stephen Reeves Garfield book.
That was Kirk Shatnerverse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Yep. I thought that sounded very familiar. Okay.
It's kind of a terrifying idea, right? A smaller ship gets in between your wings where you can't shoot at and then just shreds you by spinning slightly.
Jesus. Yeah, that's kind of scary.
That's frightening.
That's not cool, guys. So, at the collector's table, and I'm going to put this on the viewer for everybody. At the collector's table, you can very clearly see that there is a painting of Data's, a Bajoran tablet, some badges, Duck Tog. I can't remember what the name of that game was, with the purple hexagon and the little red chips. But we also see Spock's helmet is there, Geordi's visor, or a visor, two little Data soap statues like we saw at the mall that one time, the little Ferengi thing, which looks very much like a thing I've seen on Etsy, so that's a hell of a deep cut there. And then right next to that, the Stone of Gaul, which was the MacGuffin from what was that two-parter where Picard went off with the archaeologists and they stole the Vulcan psionic resonator?
Yes. Oh,
so,
damn.
Yes.
And then Riker got all mixed up in the two.
Yeah. And then at the end, Data
Gambit,
put Riker in the
brig. Gambit.
Oh,
the Gambit.
Suzanne.
Yeah, Gambit was the name of the episode.
The
Gambit.
Purple hexagon game. Is that what you're talking about? I think it's called Kataskot.
Is that Kataskot?
Is that from Voyager? Is that
looks
from Voyager?
Like it.
Yeah. Okay. The hexagon. Yeah, that's from Voyager, which I loved. There were so many little nods to Voyager in this episode too that I just absolutely loved, and some big nods to Voyager too. And I love that. That's the second time that's happened. Yay.
Also, on the collector's face, he's got that gold ribbon like the other one had in the Most Toys. That
Kivas
gold
Fajo.
Ribbon. Well, Kivas Fajo was the collector. The other guy had the gold ribbon in his face.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Yes.
Palor Toph or something.
But
anyway.
The guy that's with the collector at the collector's table is the same species as Kivas Fajo. Look at the little
lines
on the side of his head.
There's Ibalian. So you've got a Zybalian, and the guy with the ribbon in his face is the same species as the other guy with the ribbon in his face from that episode, which I love that. I love that, like, makes it look like they work together. But that ribbon, specifically, that gold ribbon, has been art in a dozen episodes of Star Trek across the franchise. They just put it on a shelf. Here, put this gold ribbon on a shelf. Okay, awesome. That's cool. So
we can use it everywhere.
That was a lot of fun.
The easiest Easter egg possible.
Break down there. The Archaeologist Guild, I didn't recognize a lot on the Archaeologist Guild. She's got a little, like, monolith there, and then behind her, she's got the same kind of swords that Worf had in his quarters on the Enterprise D. And then at some point, Boimler gets all up in the faces of the Wadi. I'm so glad those guys are back.
Awesome.
I mean, this episode is just filled with tons of alien races that we haven't seen in a long time. Yes. There's Antedians, Lurians. There looks like a Dosi, to be honest, but there are just so many in this scene.
You mean a Dozi? Like the ones that have the tulipberry wine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's awesome.
Yeah. I wanted to mention the Spock and Kirk animated series,
yes,
like cutout thing. Look, I know it's silly and I know it's the most obvious one, but like for them to make a nod to the animated series as well, I just thought was super cool. And that they were loading it on the ship and it's part of the Starfleet recruitment. It's so funny. I love that.
I mean, you've got to have a pitch, right? And they even actually confirmed something nicely in this episode about how, like, do I have to go to the Academy if I want to join Starfleet? No, we have an NCO Corps. Love right. that confirmation. We
that
don't really
cool.
hear much about that.
That was cool.
Yeah, because Miles O'Brien had mentioned in an episode of DS9 that he didn't go to the Academy.
He's a working man.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
A working man.
Blue collar through and through.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I just loved it. And I loved that, like, I loved the whole, you might stand on the bridge, sure. Like, that's exactly how recruitment works. And then, like, the pseudo Navy comment, I was like, oh, yeah.
Having actually worked one of those booths here, like, at an event, like, trying to recruit mm-hmm. people, you really do got to give those, like, vague, sure, yeah, absolutely, you might do that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Right, of course
optimistic.
You will.
But I gotta say, I really liked Petra's character. I thought that she was a pretty realistic, like, approach to somebody who was a little jaded from the time in Starfleet.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that she was good. And I think that she'll be an interesting contact for Mariner if they do keep up with each other a bit. Because that's an interesting plot line for Mariner. Because she's always been torn by this, like, desire for freedom that Starfleet stifles. Mm-hmm. So maybe that archaeologist approach is something that might appeal to her.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, am I the only one that thinks that there was a missed opportunity by the archaeologist not being Vosh?
Vosh is
just too much on the nose.
Probably a bit much. I mean, there's got to be more than one archaeologist, right? We can't make the universe so small only see the one archaeologist.
That's true. I mean, I guess it makes sense to introduce a new character, though, because it's somebody we don't know, and so it's somebody
right.
that, like, we don't know how they would influence Mariner, et cetera, et cetera. I saw Petra as a little bit similar to Seven in that way, of this whole, like, Starfleet is too bureaucratic and, like, I want to actually do the things that I want to do and be able mm-hmm. to help people or do this, you know, without being part of a pseudo-Navy, you know. I saw kind of a parallel there, and I'm wondering if... I'm curious to see where that goes with Mariner, because it seems like her whole thing is, like, hasn't really been able to get out of Starfleet and doesn't know where she would go, but now there's an option. And,
right.
I took
her, Petra, very differently. I saw her as a lot like Angel, Captain Angel from Strange New Worlds.
That's fair as well.
Because I was nervous that this was going to be like some sort of like grand plan to ingratiate or make an enemy out of Starfleet to draw their attention sort of thing. Turns out she kind of was. She was trying to make a ruckus so she could mm-hmm. steal something. But it seemed very similar to the Captain Angel like approach to just, oh, I'm ex-Starfleet, so I know what you're going through. Let me tell you how you should approach these things. This is what you could do if you changed your ways to be more like me. And it's just like, suspicious. Instant suspicious.
No, I tend to agree with you actually there, because Seven, I feel like, was more like, oh, well, I got rejected by Starfleet, so shit, I guess I have to do this now. But I also, I don't think that Seven has any resentment towards Starfleet other than them not accepting her. I don't think she has any resentment except for, like, the ones that gave up, like Picard at the beginning of the season when she said the only thing worse would be giving up. So yeah, that makes a little more sense. She seems a little more diabolical than Seven would be, because I think Seven has good intentions. I think Petra is a little more
self-serving. Shady.
Self-serving and also like scary.
A bit on the shady side.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Definitely on the shady side.
So we haven't said a whole lot about Rutherford.
I was just gonna bring up Badgie. Like
Badgie?
Rutherford said that the way that he's tried to manifest is through programs and personality things and
things. Right.
Oh,
when he was
shit.
Like when he was like programs trying to attack you, I was like, Badgie?
Oh shit.
I did not draw that connection. I like that.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I love that. God. I miss Badgie. Bring him back.
Yeah, I miss Badgie too.
I think he will be back in this series.
My desk and it's fine.
Oh my god, I love that. I think he will be back in the season though, because I think I've seen him in the trailer. I feel like I did. Which is delightful because Badgie is the best. This is hello, father. It's just awesome. Absolutely.
And the voice acting was perfect.
Can I teach you a lesson? Just one of the best characters.
Good voice acting.
Right. Rutherford was interesting. I loved seeing that. I loved seeing, because I saw a lot of myself in Rutherford, of that sort of just like young rage that people tend to get of just like, oh, I'm not gonna do what adults tell me, like whatever, I'm like old enough to know, like whatever, you know, all that kind of shit. I see that a little bit of myself in Rutherford. And so like I just really enjoyed seeing the dichotomy of the two interacting and just like one of them being kind of the nerdy side and like the one that's like, oh, I want to make friends and like have fun, and the other one being like, whatever, I'm breaking rules and I'm doing what I want because I don't care.
But so Rutherford's not all that different from a lot of other characters that we've seen in Trek, right? Like young Jean-Luc Picard was a jock who got into knife fights and like womanized and whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kirk, not as much. Kirk was called a stack of books with legs, right? But other captains and other characters out there have been so much like Rutherford was at this point, particularly Kelvin Kirk, who was willing to get into a bar fight, to have a blast, to make some noise, to do whatever the hell he wanted, to do his things his way, right?
Very true.
So Rutherford is, he's got a commonality with them, and I'm hoping that we learn more about what it was exactly that tamped down on that aggressive attitude of his. Because for Kirk, it was that stab through the heart. For Picard, it was a stab through the heart. For Kirk, it was getting recruited into Starfleet, like, out of the blue, and then thrust into command out of the destruction of Vulcan, whatever. So, like, what was it that happened to Rutherford that put him on this path? A very different path than his younger self had envisioned.
Yeah, I'm also interested to learn, like, what the cover-up was and whether or not that officer is going to be like a callback to a different Trek, a callback to somebody that we already know, or if it's going to be a new officer, new drama, new thing, you know. I think that because, you know, the implant was obviously the sort of defining moment of like, oh, this is where the personality splits. But yeah. I think that I'm interested to see who that officer was and also who the surgeons were and why they agreed to it and who agreed to it, and that's going to be really cool. And I think that they did a really good reveal with that, because we didn't really get a ton more than we already knew, but we got enough like that we didn't know that it makes it interesting, and it makes it more like, okay, I want to learn more, but we have at least more than we already knew.
It's our first thread for this,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was going to ask top candidates for Shadow Man.
I don't know.
So I was thinking that it might be something like Eric Pressman, right? We know that he was a rear admiral or a vice admiral. I don't remember. He was in the Admiralty. He got caught doing violating the Treaty of Algeron with the cloaking device and the phasing cloak. We know he was involved in Starfleet intelligence, which probably means he had contact with Section 31. Maybe instead of going straight to jail, they busted him down a couple of ranks and he started running other programs for them, right? Like, hey, here's this hotshot engineer who might be the next Leah Brahms. Let's cultivate his aptitude. Oh, it blew up in his face? Well, he's not so useful to us now, but let's make sure he doesn't remember that he worked for us, kind of thing, right? That doesn't seem all that crazy for me from an Eric Pressman. And if they could actually get Terry O'Quinn to like reprise the role, that would be awesome.
That would be cool, and it would make sense with the Romulan inverters, because he was doing all of those different things in
Vulcan
the neutral
inverters,
zone.
I think.
Was it Vulcan inverters? I thought it was Vulcan. Just
was
kidding. Vulcan inverters. My bad.
So he was working on an engine when the accident happened.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
what kind of engine was it again, or did we not know that it was just?
We don't really have details. It was just a superpowered engine.
From the appearance, it looked like a matter-antimatter reactor, so something like a small warp core for like a smaller ship. But we don't know enough to say.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to think if I could glean who the shadowy person would be based on. As I say it out loud, that doesn't make sense. I was going to say, based on what Rutherford was working on, but the engine Rutherford was working on was just an independent project. It wasn't something he was assigned to. But then when he was injured, some shadowy Starfleet person took it upon themselves to want to implant him. But
I don't think there's a reason to think that they're two different things, right? Like, yeah. The mad scientist in fiction almost always takes his work home with him, right? He may be working for someone, but he's still working on it when he's at home. So in this case, I would think Otherford or old Rutherford may have been working on this design for some shadowy group, but he played with it at home, thought he was going to crack the case, and instead it cracked his skull open. So something along those lines.
Yeah, like the whole line of like, this is going to set us back years. Obviously, like Rutherford was working for them, and like probably ended up being one of those kids that like almost got kicked out of the academy or like got caught, and then he, whoever the shadowy figure is, realized like, oh, we can use him. Because we can convince him that we're allowing him to do this because we're Starfleet, when in reality we're all breaking the rules, type of thing.
I don't have a great guess on this.
For all we know, he might have been inventing the proto star drive, right, for Prodigy, but we just don't know yet. Yeah, I don't know. We just don't know yet. They're going to give us more, I hope.
Yeah, me too.
Agreed.
I wonder if it has anything to do with them doing the race in the Devron system, which is where the anti-time anomaly was in one particular reality. Whether it was there at all is yet to be seen, but
I think it's more than just identifiably Romulan space or right on the Romulan neutral zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. I'm with you though.
It might be.
I wasn't too into Cressman. I much more liked the idea that it was a aspiring and ambitious young Dougherty. Admiral Dougherty, last seen getting his face stretched on a table in Star Trek Insurrection.
Timeline-wise, how does that work out for us?
Well, yeah, timeline-wise, it's 10 years before. It's basically like 7 years before Insurrection. He could have gotten a promotion from here. That's just where my brain was thinking. Like, he maybe got promoted up. You can't really see.
It's not crazy.
If he's got 3 or 4 pips here.
Wait a minute. The Rutherford accident was 7 years before
Insurrection.
So we're talking easily somewhere within
2368
TNG time.
2369, 2370. 2370 is when, or 2371 is when the new uniform's starting to get introduced, and we saw a mishmash of those along the Enterprise D before it was destroyed. And we know that Lower Decks takes place circa 2381 plus.
Yeah,
so it's just about to intersect with Generations, if you go back and give it just, you know, a little bit of a stretch.
But, at least according to Memory Alpha here, Dougherty died in 2375.
Oh. So it's 5 years before.
Yeah.
So I think...
Either way, so I'm a little dubious about the Dougherty claim, just because he was a 3-star, like a 3-pip admiral, which is a bit higher...
But... Hear me out. Climb. Picard was a 4-pip admiral, like 6 years after Nemesis. So, you know, rank. They gave a cadet a ship in the Kelvin universe. They don't really care about rank at that point.
That's fair.
But see, Dougherty's interest in Rutherford could be explained by his interest in the biochemicals that they wanted to get out of the rings.
I think it's not a match.
You know what I think would actually be better than any of these suppositions for existing characters? Don't give me a Badmiral. Give me just another commander or another captain, somebody new, right? We've got so many Badmirals as it is. I don't want it to be somebody like Leighton. I don't want Dougherty. I don't want Press. I don't want it. Give me something new.
That would be cool.
Oh, you know who I... here's my guess. The guy that wanted to take apart Data in the season Maddox? 2 episode where Maddox, Bruce Maddox.
I don't know. This doesn't seem like it's his specialty. He was all about robotics and cybernetics. This is an engine design.
But
that's true.
Cybernetics is what was put on Rutherford.
That's fair.
So, I mean, it's definitely an option. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where
they'd have to explain how Maddox switched from a science division to a command division.
That's true.
But really, other than that, we are grasping at straws. For all we know, it could be Mariner's dad.
We also know that Maddox's ending is still as a roboticist, so...
Yep.
That is true.
And,
but that's the thing. We really don't know much, and I think that was probably on purpose. Don't want anyone to be able to conclusively guess who it is at this point.
Every show I'm watching right now is all about creating ambiguity in the watchers, right? Like this, the Rings of Power show, is it this guy Sauron? Is that guy Sauron? Is that one Sauron? That's
absolutely
the whole show right now, right? Same thing with House of the Dragon. Are they the bad guys? Are they the bad guys? Just can't be sure.
Sorry.
Here it's just, who is this villain? And is he actually a villain?
It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm all for the speculation game. That's what I'm here for.
Just make the twist, if there is a twist, something at least that makes sense, right? Don't just lost me. Don't do that.
It's Rutherford from the future.
Or don't do...
My God!
Don't do who future guy was intended on being.
It's Jonathan Archer.
Enterprise. Yeah.
God.
Yeah, that would have been so cheap.
I'm literally wearing a Doctor Who shirt. I've had enough of people from the future messing with their past selves for a bit.
We could just not for a while. That'd be great.
Let's make this not a time traveler, please.
So far, we've been pretty good with avoiding weird bits of time travel on this show.
They've only had to go back in time to like save the Earth like 4 or 5 times max.
So far.
And you know,
speaking of like,
someone on Reddit broke down the list. And it's like 7 times.
They probably just don't know about all of them. They're only ensigns.
Right.
That's true. They're just ensigns.
Well, and I was like, but you know, if you have a mission to go back in time to save the world versus you accidentally get thrust back in time to save the world, Mariner might be making a distinction there.
Besides, bet you that nobody in Starfleet really knows the details of all good things. I'll bet you Picard mostly kept that shit to himself because they'd think he was crazy.
Yeah. It's like, all right, Grandpa, let's get you back to bed.
how many times would you be able to get out of any kind of court-martial by being like, no, Q put me into a time pocket dimension where I had to save the universe. Really, honestly, listen to me.
Blame it on Q. That's what I would do.
No. Blame it on Q.
Q shows up. I would like to testify for myself, please. I don't know this person.
I thought you were
dead.
Shit.
No. That's future me. Past me is very much alive.
I'm doing this pro se.
But they're not temporally locked. Their future and past me's are the same me.
We're getting into time travel again.
Yeah.
We're getting into that again. I want to talk about Boimler going to the brig.
Okay. I loved it. He deserved it, and it was good for character moments.
He broke a pencil.
And he writes on the wall of the brig, Boimler's guest house. Mariner's HQ, but it's Boimler's guest house.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's so cute.
He added to the drawing.
Yep. Their friends are good. They really love each other. It's
cool. No,
we also
I agree
to see
with Kayshawn
though. Again.
He deserved it.
We did get to see Kayshawn. Kayshawn has kind of been relegated to like glorified extra this season. It's kind of okay.
Well, how much character development are we expecting out of Kayshawn? So I think we're getting what we're going to get.
Mirab, his sails unfurled.
Mirab with sails unfurled? You want to leave?
Yeah, get out.
Oh.
Don't show such disrespect to Kayshawn.
Command.
My God.
Temba.
But no, I'm with you. It's weird that we have essentially a chief security officer and also a chief tactical officer at the same time, because we've got Shax and Kayshawn. There's some overlap there, so I don't know, Kayshawn doesn't get much character development as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were supposed to think that Shax was dead when Kayshawn came aboard. And then yeah. Shax came back, and that's what I wanted to talk about. I just remembered that. They've had a lot of references this season to the koala, the Black Mountain. I am suspecting at the end of the episode, someone is going to have to die. And season four is going to be about confronting the koala and the Black Mountain and fighting the three faceless versions of your father. I think that
That'd be cool.
would be cool.
But also, I don't want anybody to die.
Well, we just had Hemmer die. Wasn't that enough for you?
No. Right?
No. It will never be enough for me. You know.
Oh, shit.
You know what they're doing in Picard Season 3. You know everything's on the table.
I thought you were going with the three faceless virgins.
No. That's not what happens. You have to fight the three faceless versions of your father.
I know, but...
No.
Get your mind out the gutter.
What's in my mind sounds better to me.
Keep your mind. The three faceless
virgins.
I just realized something.
What if the four horsemen.
What if one of the main people dies, and the reason that we haven't seen Talyn yet is because Talyn replaces one of them at the end of the season?
You heard it here on Beyond Trek Podcast. In season four, Talyn replaces Rutherford. What are your thoughts and opinions?
Not Rutherford!
Would you prefer Tendi? Would you prefer Tendi?
No, I don't want any of them to die.
Obviously the one who's going to get Tasha Yard on this show is the Pelican Counselor dude or whatever the hell he is. Miglimo, yeah, he's got to go. Miglimo's got to go.
I mean, honestly, with the way Jack Quaid's career is kind of like notching up, they could kill Boimler.
I hope not. I really Boimler, like Boimler. Because
he's Bold Boimler, and Bold Boimler's come up like more than once, and maybe his final thing is like, I'm Bold Boimler, I'll save the ship, and then he dies, and then Talyn replaces him.
And then, and then his transporter clone gets demoted and has to come back and join them.
But then Jack Quaid isn't free from the voice role, right?
No, Jack Quaid has to stay.
Besides, from everything Jack Quaid has said on the interviews, it sounds like he absolutely loves this role.
Of course he does.
Yeah, Jack Quaid is locked in a basement. He can't.
He's playing a 24th century version of Huey.
Yeah.
And getting paid.
And getting paid.
The check clears. Yep.
Yep. The check clears. Yeah. Okay. So, I want to address this. If you guys feel like we've said what we wanted to say about the episode, because I've got some beef. To take off the grill.
Oh, we have beef.
Yes,
I'm here for the beef.
We've got beef. Big J's beef.
Serve it
beef
up, me. Big J.
We gotta come up with a theme song for Big J's beef. We gotta commission somebody else.
We need it. We need a theme song. Renzo, come on, give me some fun.
Renzo, we'll we gotta head. Have a theme song for Big J's beef.
Let me have something.
Do we need to celebrate beef?
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. It's just the red alert sound.
That works.
You can do better. You can do better. I want like I don't know some hip hop something. I don't know. We'll brainstorm.
Licensing.
We'll circle back around. We'll circle back around to that one. We'll talk offline. Okay. So this is going to be pretty bold beef, but I've been thinking this each episode of this season. Maybe it's just me, but I am finding it difficult to have the kind of talks that we've had on past Star Trek series like Picard, some certain episodes of Lower Decks, a couple of real thought-provoking discussions with Prodigy. I feel like Lower Decks is in that shtick where it's all about catch the reference and find the Easter egg. Like the amount of actual substance seems to be lacking. It's a pause the episode here, here, and here, and pick out all the throwbacks, references, etc. And for me, as we're talking about all of this, and before we sat down to talk, I kept thinking in my head, what would I talk about? Like, what stuck out for me? And I wasn't finding it. Like, it wasn't grabbing me like the whole thing with Boimler and his girlfriend and him being insecure with his girlfriend's big broad shoulder strapping dude. We had a whole conversation about that. That was like really tied into real world stuff. And we also had the discussion in Prodigy with relating to a parent. What was so dire or important where this father could run off the ship, leave his daughter in peril? And there was a lot of good time we spent on that. I'm getting this feeling that Lower Decks is not quite lending itself to those deep dive conversations. It's kind of more of a I saw a Tribble in the bush back behind that stick and things like that. Now tell me I'm wrong, tell me I'm being just old crotchety, but that's how I feel. I'm out cutting the grass today thinking, what the hell am I even going to say about this episode? I was coming up dry. Suzanne, help me out here.
So this episode specifically, I think, had a couple of things. One was Boimler learning that, like, yeah, losing your cool might get you in a little bit of trouble, but, like, Ransom was still impressed with him standing up for what he believed in. And so, like, yeah, it's not necessarily, like, perfect to be, like, you want to be on your best behavior, but sometimes you have to stand up for what you believe in. So that was one of them. Mm-hmm. The second one was Rutherford racing with his friends. And the biggest scene that, for me, in the episode was when Otherford was dying and said that, like, I had so much rage in me and I don't see that in you, and I don't, you know, you have to keep those friends, you know, we can't, because if we both inhabit this body then we'll both be gone, but, like, you don't have that rage in you anymore, like, you have a brighter future ahead of you, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there are lessons in it, and I think that the show is meant to be like a comedy show, and so there aren't as many lessons to be learned from it. But I think that even, especially in this episode, like, we haven't talked about it a ton, but Rutherford had that moment of, like, I want to race with my friends. I want to be backed up by my crew and the people that I care about, which to me is the whole point of Star Trek, is that found family aspect of it, and sort of knowing that, like, I have people that will back me up no matter what. That was in episode one, too, with Mariner sort of stealing the Cerritos, etc. And then, you know, Boimler realizing that I don't always have to be completely within the lines to be right, mm-hmm. and to be correct about, like, you know, or at least to stand up for what I believe in. And so, yeah, he spends the night in the brig, but at the same time, his superior officer still invited him out for a drink, even though it's protocol. He was like, that was kind of sick. So I think that there are lessons to be learned, but I do agree that Lower Decks does have that sort of, like, Easter eggy, pause it here, pause it there, try and figure out all of it. And a lot of it goes over my head because I haven't seen every single Trek all the way through in a very long time. I haven't seen all of TNG yet. I haven't seen all of DS9 yet. So a lot of it kind of goes over my head. But, like, I still think that there are lessons to be found within it, personally. That's my take.
So, Big J, my approach is that I think you're right, that the show does do a lot of just fan service inclusion of Easter eggs. That is absolutely something that they do, yep. Right? But I don't think that detracts from the fact that it's still telling Star Trek stories, but they're comedic ones. It's a different tone of show than every other Star Trek. Every other Star Trek has been more serious than it's been funny. They have funny, but they're more serious than they're funny. This show is the opposite. This show is more funny than it is serious, so you have to take the way that they tell you these lessons differently, right? Whereas in this episode, we see this hilarious story about, like, somebody battling their inner demons and trying to repress their old situations, their old feelings. Here they present it as this funny, like, haha, let's build spaceships and race each other, right? In another show, we might have had an episode like maybe a character has, like, their evil half fighting against their good half around the ship. Or maybe their half Klingon side is trying to rage and break things while their half human side is trying to calm people down. We've literally had the same story told for other characters, right? We see the same thing in other episodes too, like in Room for Growth, the previous one. Like, we had this great storyline about how, like, Jack and Billups were, like, trying to get this crew to, like, relax, right? Like, Ransom was worried about the engineers and so was the captain, so they put the engineers on a rest break. Sometimes taking a break is important. It's presented funny. They have to play with a kitten. They have a puppy's room and a kitten's room, and only weird people go to the kitten's room, right? That's funny, but it's true that we burn ourselves out. But the ways that we find relaxation are different from person to person, so one size does not fit all, right? Same thing is true for all these episodes, man.
Yeah, you're right, and I'm glad you brought up that episode, because that was one we missed talking about, but we can easily kind of twine it in here? There are some relevant points there. Is that being overworked, getting an assignment to work a booth down at the flea market, getting some of these shit assignments, and you get people on the ship, on these Starfleet ships, that are workaholics, and they can't relax, don't know how to relax. Take them to a spa, go get your nails done, go get a pedicure. Well, I'm thinking about, like, oh, what was that thing I was working on? And it's 2 a.m, you wake up in your sleep because now you have the solution. Or you realize what line of code was messing up your whole thing. I've had that happen, and I've certainly been stuck at my desk, not wanting to give up on the thing because, like, all right, let me try one more thing. And in Starfleet, I can only imagine being able to.
I mean, a good boss will kick you off your desk. A good boss will kick you out and be like, you need to stop. Go home. Come back at this tomorrow with a fresh mind. My boss has done this to me countless times. It's like, Renzo, it is 11 o'clock. Get off. I will kick you off the VPN right now if you don't go to bed, kind of thing. Right? Like, this happens. Right? So I feel like that's the same kind of thing you'll see in Starfleet. A good boss will know when to tell you to fuck off. This is not your problem right now.
Right.
And Starfleet's supposed to be like our ideal world, our ideal employment, our ideal people. We see that all throughout Lower Decks. I think Lower Decks has done a great job of humanizing how Starfleet treats people. Remember when Rutherford wanted to switch out of engineering? It was like a party. Everybody celebrated. Congratulations, you do great wherever you go. He goes to command. He struggles there. Ransom supportive. Goes to another place. Security, hugs, baby bear, and so forth and so on. He tries all these things and everybody's supportive, right? These are lessons that we can aspire towards, but even if they're not realistic. Something like this, where you're being sent to do a shit assignment like a recruitment drive, it's pretty boring. I've done them. But they're important for the wealth, or for the health and wealth of the company, or of the organization in this case, right?
Someone's got to do it.
Finding people is important. So
you've got to sit the booth. That's just...
Somebody's got to scrub biofilters. Somebody's got to get the carbon scoring off the sheet metal or whatever, right? Like, these things matter.
There's also something to be said about the saturation of what Star Trek is today. Star Trek today is overarching plots, whether it's episode to episode or, serialized. We didn't have that 30 years ago, and even if we can watch those episodes nostalgically, there's still a hell of a lot of stuff that doesn't happen in those episodes that you're like, wait a second. Wait, you're telling me that dude lived 40 years for 24 minutes, and in the next episode he's perfectly fine? Nah, he should have been relieved of command, taken to the farm, chill out, have some margaritas, go to his wine vineyard. He should have been gone for like 2 years.
Janeway.
What about best of both worlds, dude? After a couple days of Zlacutis, you should be on the farm.
The best of both worlds is the culmination of Picard's busiest December on record. In December of that year, just before he gets assimilated at the end of the season, he has to deal with dying and being regenerated by John Doe, having Sarek dump 200 years of emotional gravitas into his brain and having to deal with it, and then get assimilated. Like, Picard,
just another day in
you're a hero of the Federation. We are retiring you. Everything you need is going to be taken care of. Go live on your vineyard. Go, just go.
Your vineyard?
Yep.
Vineyard. It's a vineyard. It's fine.
Because like he's going to be whining about it.
Hey,
Good cover.
Good cover. Well done. No, I mean, I don't know. I think that's the truth with, like, I mean, obviously, Janeway needed therapy so bad.
Everybody does. Like,
everybody does. And I'm sure there was a therapy program in the holodeck, but, you know, whatever.
I would join Starfleet. If Starfleet was a real thing, I'd be there signing up.
Same?
That's sure fair. Would. Yeah, I would. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like I would, like, probably shit my pants once or twice getting in a bad situation on a starship. I would probably be like, mommy!
The first time you dive towards a black hole, I'm sure everybody drowns themselves.
The first time I skydive off a space elevator, I'm like, fuck!
The first time I get transporter clone, I would be pissed.
The first time, implying that there's a second and a third.
Oh, God, no. No.
But I mean, I don't know. I think what I love about Lower Decks is that, like, it is comedy and it is funny and it humanizes Starfleet for us. I think that it makes it to the point, because I feel like my main complaint with some of the Star Trek shows is like, why are we not talking about this? Like, why are we just moving on to the next mission and, like, moving on to the next thing and not, like, maybe having a little tiny discussion about, hey, we're all traumatized.
Which Discovery, I think, does better. Therapy.
Yes.
Discovery handles that a lot better because they talk about the problems and the trauma that comes from these things. Yep. Conversely, Lower Decks is episodic. They may have some overarching plot lines that stretch across the season, but it is largely episodic. They're not going to talk about Galrakians in this episode and how they attacked the Cerritos, even though there was one in the episode, right?
Same who was thing. Interested in crystals.
Yeah, it's very fitting. But point is, this show is going to have that same kind of problem TNG did, where every episode is somewhat disconnected from the previous, mm-hmm. with like small exceptions, as we've seen the Pak-led shit and now Rutherford's thing. But yeah, I mean, I think that's just the limitation of the format that they've chosen for the show. It's going to feel a little bit less serious. It's going to feel a little bit less joined to the rest of it. And it's going to be less like teachy because of the length. Episodes are only 20 something minutes long. So we've got limitations here, Big J. I don't think your beef is quite so warranted.
Okay.
Yeah.
His beef is warranted where I'm suspicion concerned I had. Because I only watch this show for the deep dive, weird cuts stuff.
I live for them too, man. But
I do recognize, like, there are plenty of episodes that we have talked about where we've been like, wow, this is kind of profound. You guys want to, like, dig into this? You know, when we went through Veritas, and, like, as much fun as that episode was, it turns out they were at, like, a Chuck E. Cheese or something like that. You know, the teardown of that episode is Boimler is the true fans standing up for the writers, telling the fans who hate the show to fuck off. If you don't like it, don't watch it. That was a deeper episode. And we're gonna go up and down on that.
And Wedge Dooge was another very serious, deep episode, right? Like, the way different races approach problems, etc. That's a lot to go into in a 30-minute fucking episode. Yeah. Not all of them can be quite so deep, right?
Boimler's dedication to doing that Borg hologram program over and over and over, and just the simple line of yes, I taught the Borg Queen empathy was like, wait, I want that to be an episode now. Like, hold
he also
up.
Beat her at chess, don't forget.
Yeah, just there are moments to dig into for that. For this, we kind of just went a little more superficial, but you know, Boimler gets triggered when his pip gets ripped off. He's worked for that pip.
Remember the episode from TOS, This Side of Paradise, the one that had the little plants that mind control you?
Yeah.
Equally had no depth to it. Honestly,
one of those plants was in this episode.
I know. That's
Thanks.
What I remember.
I had a feeling.
That's why I remembered it. But just as an example, right? Like, that's an episode that's pretty fucking simplistic. It didn't have a deep meaning in TOS. And not every episode gets that.
There might be plot threads that weave from here to other things. Like, what if the Archaeology Guild gets a major donation from the Negus for returning his staff? And something goes on with that.
Yeah, or Petra gets in trouble with a diamond, tries to kidnap her, and she calls Mariner for help, right? Like, oh, I've got this Starfleet girl I know. She's a badass. Let me hail her while the Decora is chasing me in my little shuttle or something, right? Like, it can happen.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Well, and I get that this show is different from Discovery and Strange New Worlds, etc. And the audience is probably different, the episode style as well, but when I look at these, and this just hit me with the episode from last week and this most recent one, for any other recordings we did for Picard, for example, Discovery, there were things I was ready to talk about. I knew were going to be big discussions. Let's get into it. But with Lower Decks, I'm just like, huh, well, you know, not a whole lot happened. Let's look for the references and Easter eggs. And I know that there are some episodes where we do get some good quality deep dives. Just seems like it's marketably less than these other series. Now, I don't know if that's by design, if we're trying to look too deep into a show that's just surface comedy and fun.
It is. So, it's a show that is more fun, and it's a show that's shorter. There's less opportunities for it.
Yeah, right. I mean, considering that the creators of this show also worked on Rick and Morty, like, this show is not meant to be. I think that the whole point of the show was to be something different. I think that the whole point of the show was to still show the occasional Starfleet message, but be different, be comedy, be animated, be not what we're used to. And I think that I like that about it. And some people, and like, I see what you mean about like, I don't really know what I want to talk about. Like, I don't, you know, I don't have any really deep stuff to talk about. And I do get that, because I also had that issue where I like, okay, well, what specific little Easter eggs do I want to talk about this time? Because some of the Easter eggs mean a lot, and some of the Easter eggs are just pictures of things, like the little Stargazer model or whatever it may be. Because I think that they like didn't get a Stargazer model in the Eagle Moss thing, and they were upset about that, and so they put it in Lower Decks or something like that. But I think that this show is not meant to be like a an Aesop's Fable. I don't think it's supposed to be lessons every single episode. I think sometimes it's just meant to be really funny. And I'm okay with that, because I like cartoons. I like cartoons. Not everybody likes cartoons. Not everybody likes cartoons that are just specifically like cartoons to be cartoons. And that's fine.
I think I'm spoiled.
But it is.
Being spoiled.
No.
But I
know what you mean.
I think that both of you have very fair points. And it also does, there's a lot of dependency on what you sit down at the table for. And if you're sitting down at the table to be like, all right, I'm going to pause every 3 frames to see what I can see, then you might be...
And some people do that.
You might be Dag. You might be... I was going to say you might be Gagi Yogi on Twitter, because that guy breaks things down like
it's
no
insane.
Other. What he do? That's incredibly awesome. The dude has notes from like the 90s when he was originally watching the shows, writing down all this stuff. He looks at the word meticulous and says you're not good enough.
So true.
But also, you might just sit back and you just might want some laughs, and you might be like, you know what? What's the lesson of the episode? Star Trek may have had a morality play, and you were a kid, or when you're an adult now. So what does Star Trek bring to the table for you, and in what ways does Lower Decks fill that bucket? If you're listening, if you're watching, let us know in the comments. Hit us up on Twitter at Beyond Trek Pod or Trek Nexus or Captain Janeway, but with an X instead of an A in that first A. You know, Renzo is at Hawk Shark, and Big J is 76 Big J.
Yep.
Right. You know, just let us know, like, what brings you to the table in Star Trek, and how does Lower Decks satisfy your craving? For everything else, I don't know. There's supposed to be something profound.
I'm good.
But my brain just wasn't functioning that far. So I'm just going to say to the audience,
For everything else, there's Master Chief?
Master Chef. Master Chief, Master Chef. Oh, can we have a Halo cooking show?
Ooh, sure.
Cooking and combat. Absolutely. Done.
Cooking and combat.
Beyond Halo
Sold.
Podcast.
Stay here for the Beyond Halo podcast, and thank you Sold. For always going boldly. Beyond Trek podcast.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to our Patreon and Anchor supporters, to S. Tam and Nora Hickson. Thank you so much for being a part of Beyond Trek podcast.
We are Beyond Trek podcast. Lower your inhibitions and surrender your years. We will add inspirational and hilarious Trek content to your day. Your attention will adapt to subscribe to us. Resistance is futile.